The topic that I decided to choose, they asked me to speak about a category or a topic that could go into the Jewish history classroom. So the topic that I chose was a topic that is definitely a topic that's very relevant historically, but also hopefully that's something that's very relevant today as well. The topic of the official title is something along the lines of Conflict and Confluence, Historical Approaches to Modern Culture. So this is a question that, especially in today's day and age, that is something that we grapple with. The question of how does Judaism view outside culture, outside wisdom, outside knowledge? This question can take many different forms. When you talk about culture, culture is very broad. Culture can refer to a lot of different aspects of life. We can talk about art, you can talk about music, theater, just society in general. And you can talk about education. Many different areas kind of can be subsumed under this topic of culture. What I want to do today is take a little bit of a historical purview. What we're going to do is we're going to start as far back as we can go. We're probably not going to get to today's day and age completely, but don't worry, we'll make sure we get a little bit of an overview. And what I wanted to do is kind of analyze and look at some sources in Chazal, some sources in our scholarly literature that deal with what does the Jewish worldview have to do with the world around us. How does Judaism view that which the world has to offer? How are we supposed to incorporate that? Are we supposed to reject it? Are we supposed to ignore it? What does Judaism think about the world around us? And to do that, we're going to start back with a Mishnah in Perkei Avos. This is a Mishnah. This is a Mishnah that has actually been made into a song. So maybe if people have been at a wedding recently, I know there are a lot of weddings going on this evening. So maybe this is a song that appears sometimes in wedding music. It's a Mishnah in Perkei Avos from one of my favorite Tanoim, Ben Bagbag. It's one of my favorite Tanoim. So Ben Bagbag Omer. He says, when it comes to looking at the Torah, one should not just read through the Torah in a cursory fashion, but rather one should delve into it over and over again, because everything is contained within the Torah. It's a very loud noise. Then he continues, that one should really immerse oneself in it, go through it very carefully. Umina lo sazua. Don't move away from the study of Torah. Don't stop looking at the Torah. She'in lecha mida tova himena. There is no better task, so to speak, that we've been given than to have the privilege of analyzing and learning the Torah in all of its depths. So when you look at this Mishnah, at first glance you might say, this Mishnah has nothing to do with how Judaism would look at outside knowledge or outside wisdom or other things that the world has to offer beyond the purview of Torah. However, one of the commentators, Rav Ovadia Mibartanura, and because we're in the Jewish history component, make sure to mention Rav Ovadia Mibartanura. He lived in the 15th century and he was Italian, and he is most known for his commentary on the Mishnah. He wrote a magnum opus commenting on the Mishnah, so he is one of the premier commentators on the Mishnah. So in his comments in Perkei Avos, so he says, well, the Mishnah has a peculiar line. The Mishnah says, hafochba dekulaba, everything is contained within it. So what does that mean, that everything is contained within the Torah? So you know what Rav Ovadia Bartanura says in source number two? He says, this is source number two, and it's the second line in the middle of the line. Umina lo sazua, don't leave from the study of Torah. Shelo tomar, that one should not say, lamadati chachmas Yisrael, I already studied all of the wisdom of the Jewish people. I know everything that the Torah has to offer. Eilech ve'elmad chachmas Yivanis. So know what I'm going to do now? I'm going to go and I'm going to study Greek wisdom. There's a lot of other wisdom out there in the world that was not contained or is not explicit in the Torah. So I'm going to go and study that now because I've already finished everything that the Torah has to offer. He says, don't say that. She'ein mutter lilmod chachmas yevanis, be it is because it is not permissible to go ahead and learn outside wisdom. Elo b'makom she'aser leharher b'divrei Torah, kigon b'beis ha'merchas or b'beis ha'kisei. The only time it's permissible to think about things that are not having to do with Torah is if you're in a situation where it would be forbidden to actually think about Torah, such as in the bathhouse or in the restroom. So that's a time when you could think about Greek wisdom, philosophy, things like that, great. But when you're outside, other than that circumstance, so then everything should be devoted to Torah. That's how Rav Avadim Bar Tanura interpreted this Mishnah. Hafoch ba hafoch ba tekula ba. Everything's there, so then if everything's there, so what are you doing looking anywhere else? You don't need to look anywhere else. It's all right here in front of you. That's one interpretation of this Mishnah. But he's not the only interpretation of the Mishnah. The Meiri, Menachem Meiri, who was a 13th century commentator who lived in Provence, which is the southern part of France, and there was a short period of time in the medieval period where there was where Provence was actually a very prominent area of Jewish scholarship. So the Meiri, and the Meiri follows in line with the teachings of the Rambam, which we'll get to in more depth in a little bit. So the Meiri has a different interpretation of the Mishnah. He says, Hafoch ba, hafoch ba, tekula ba, in source number 3, says that look in, everything is in the Torah, so you should continuously study and relearn the Torah. He says that has nothing to do with what is not in the Torah. That has nothing to do with going and studying other worldly wisdom or looking into other things that the world has to offer. Hafokba, hafokba, tekula ba means, says the Meiri, we're not going to read everything inside just because I don't want to run over, but the Meiri says in source number 3, he says, what does this mean? It means that if the Torah is sometimes difficult to understand, don't worry. Keep on learning it, keep on reviewing it, you'll get it, and you'll understand there everything that you need to know to understand what Hashem wants us to learn from His Torah is contained within the Torah. It might be difficult, it might take one time, it might take two times, it might take three times. Continuously study it because eventually you'll understand it, you'll get what it is that the Torah wants us to know. And then he says, and even if you understand it, we know that there is nothing better than review, right? The Gemara says in Maseches Chagiga that it's the person who reviews that which they learned 100 times is pales in comparison to the person who reviews what they learned 101 times, right? That one extra time makes all the difference, says the Gemara. So he says, just because you've learned something, just because you understand it, doesn't mean that you won't gain more insight by going over it again and again and again. But as you'll notice, this interpretation places this Mishnah having nothing to do with what does the Jewish worldview have to say about looking outside of the Torah, about what the world or other culture or other wisdom, other knowledge has to offer. So this is kind of the first source, the Mishnah. This is the Mishnayos are dating back to about 200 CE, so that's pretty far back. So that's the first historical source that we'll take a look at. But we'll see that even around that same time, that there are other statements in Chazal that are more explicit than this Mishnah. For example, the Sifri in Parshas Veschanan, in source number 4. So this is also a statement from the Tanayim, which also parallels, in generally speaking, parallels the same time period as the Mishnah. So we all know that what we say in Shema, the Pasuk says, V'dibarta bam, right? That we should say the words of Torah, the words of Torah should be spoken. So the Sifri, the Medrash Halacha on this Pasuk, says the following, source number 4, at the end of the first line. V'dibarta bam, you should speak these words. Asom ikar, you should make these words the fundamental, the primary topic. V'alta asam tefela, don't make them secondary to something else. Shelo yehi masacho matancho elo aleihem. Your deliberations, your engagements, should always be revolving around the words of Torah. And what does that mean? Shalote arev bahem devarim. You should not mix with the words of Torah other words. Shalotomar, meaning to say, mamarati chokhmas Yisrael. Don't say that I've learned, again here, like we saw in the Rav Avadim Bar Tanura, don't say that I've learned all of the wisdom the Jewish people have to offer. Eleich ve'elmod chokhmas ulos olam. Now I'm going to go learn the wisdom that's available from the rest of the world. So v'dibar tavam, that we say in the Kriyat Shema, don't speak the words of Torah. Do not say, I know those words, I've got those words down, now it's time to pick up other words. I'm going to go and study other sources of information, other sources of knowledge. So again, you see in the Sifri, here you see in the Sifri, a statement in Chazal that seems to be against looking outside of the Torah, looking into other sources of knowledge. However, this we just want to point out, just to put it out there, that we'll see the first step in this year is that nothing is going to be clear. Everything we're talking about Torah, we're talking about Judaism, we know that everything is complex, life is nuanced, so there's never a clear-cut way of interpreting things, at least on the superficial level. So it's been pointed out by some people, and I actually read this in an article by a professor who used to teach at Ben Gurion University in Israel, who was a professor of Jewish philosophy. So he pointed out, his name is Gerald Blitzstein, who is a Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik, and he pointed out that this Sifri, there is a very particular formulation that you'll find. So if you say, when the Sifri says, don't say that I've already mastered the Torah, and now I'm going to go try and study other things. So the way it formulates it is, I've mastered Chochmas Yisrael, the wisdom of the Jews of Yisrael. Now I'm going to look at the Chochmas, the wisdom, Umos HaOlam, of the other nations. So he says, the Sifri says, don't say that. So what's the problem saying that? So you could say the problem is that you can only learn Torah. There's nothing else. The Torah is everything. Forget outside culture. He says, no, that's not what the Sifri's intention is. He says, the problem with what you said was you put on an equal playing field, on an equal footing. You said Chachmas Yisrael, wisdom of the Jews, and wisdom of the rest of the world. They're two college classes. I signed up for this class at my first period, and I have this class second period. It's the same thing. So I finished first period, now I'm going to go to second period. It says that's the problem. If you understand that Chachmas Yisrael is a step above, it's above and beyond any wisdom, it's divine knowledge, it's divine wisdom, if that's the understanding, so then you learn Chochmas Yisrael. So of course there's room to enlighten oneself and to complement that study with other sources of information, as long as we understand that Chochmas Yisrael comes from God, and the rest of the Greek philosophy was originated by the Greeks. They might have had some good ideas that fit nicely with the Torah. But in the end of the day, we have to realize that there's a separation, a differentiation. If we ignore that separation, so then we've reached a problem. We've made the Torah something that is not primary. That's what the Sifri is coming to teach us, not coming to teach us that the Torah is the end-all, be-all, and the only thing that's out there. So again, we have to realize that things are not always as clear. So that's what we see from more of the Tanaitic in the around 200 CE. That's some of the source material that we see in terms of those references. Now, let's jump ahead a little bit to the next stage in our Jewish history soiree. And we will take a look at the Gemara. So now moving from the Tanaim to the Amoraim. So now we're jumping ahead to approximately 300 years till 500 CE with the codification of the Gemara. And here we find a text in Maseches Menachos, a source from the Gemara that deals with different aspects of the karbanos and the sacrifices that were offered in the Beis HaMikdash. So this is not exactly where you would expect to find a discussion about learning secular wisdom or engaging in modern culture, but the Gemara always has surprises for us. And here's one right here. Seches Menachos, source number 5. This appears on Sadi Tes Amud Beis, 99b. And here, if you see the large print in the middle of source 5, so we're going to go 5 lines down. 1, 2, 3, 4 on the 5th line, in the middle of the line. So it says, Midavarav shel Rabbi Yossi. From the words of Rabbi Yossi Nilmod, we will learn the following. Afilu loshina adam ela perek echad shachris uperek echad arvis. If a person just learns one small chapter of Torah in the morning and then another small chapter of Torah in the evening, kayim mitzvos lo yamush sefer haTorah azemipicha, he will be in fulfillment of the commandment of the mitzvah that the Torah should never leave one's lips. Lo yamush sefer haTorah azemipicha. The Torah should never should leave the lips. We should always be talking words of Torah. So what does that mean? You could have thought that meant everything that comes out of our mouths has to be something from the Torah. He says, no. That means in the morning, make sure you learn a little bit. In the evening, make sure you learn a little bit. And then you've bookended your day with words of Torah. And that makes it as if the Torah has never left our lips, never has left our consciousness. And then he goes along and says further, now we're on line 6-7, towards the middle of the line. Amar Rav Yochanan Mishum Rav Shimon ben Yochai, Afilu lo kar adam lo ela kriyat shema shachris va'arvis, kiyem lo yamush, v'davar ze asur le omro b'fnei amei haretz. So the Gemara, next opinion, Rabbi Yochanan says, in the name of Rav Shimon ben Yochai, he says, by the way, this is very easy to do. You know what you can do? Say Shema in the morning, say Shema in the evening. Shema comes from the Torah, of course. You've said some Torah in the morning, you've said some Torah in the evening, and there you go. That's your day. But don't tell this to ignorant people. If you tell this to ignorant people, so they're going to be like, oh, great. I don't have to go to school anymore. I don't have to learn any Torah. Say Shema in the morning, say Shema in the night. I'm all set and I'm done. So Rabbi Yochanan says, you're right. That's true. But don't tell anyone that, because then no one's going to learn any Torah. That's going to be a problem. Then Rava says, Rava Amar, mitzvah lo omer fnei amar yaretz. No, no, no. Not only is this correct, all you got to do is say Shema in the morning, say Shema in the evening, and not only that, it's a mitzvah to publicize that's all you got to do. Make sure people know about it. That way, if you're talking to a large group of talking to the masses, not everybody is cut out to spend their entire day learning intensely the words of Torah. People have other interests. They have their attention spans are not that great. It's difficult. So don't let them get demoralized or feel bad about themselves that they can't learn all day. They should know that with all that Hashem requires of them is to learn a little bit in the morning, a little bit in the evening, and they're good. That's what the Torah wants. That shows that you bookend your day with the Torah. So that shows that the Torah is really how you're living your life. That's what you care about the most. That's opinion number one. Opinion number two. Sha'ol ben Dama ben Achoso shel Rabbi Yishmael es Rabbi Yishmael. So ben Dama, the nephew of Rabbi Yishmael, asked his uncle Rabbi Yishmael. So he says, listen, kigon ani shelamadati kol Torah kula. I'm a very simple guy. I'm very modest. I know the entire Torah. Mahu lomur chachmas yivanes. Now that I know the entire Torah, so now I want to go and I want to learn Greek wisdom. So can I go ahead and do that? That's what he asked his uncle Rabbi Yishmael. So Rabbi Shmuel says to him, "Kara lov hamikra azeh." Rabbi Shmuel says, "Do you remember this pasuk? You know the entire Torah, so you must remember this pasuk. What's the pasuk say? Lo yamush sefer haTorah azeh mipicha. The words of the Torah should never leave your lips, should never leave your mouth. V'higisa bo yomam v'layla. The end of that pasuk is, what should you do? You should toil over the Torah day and night." So says Rabbi Shmuel. Say, "Ubdok sha'a she'eno." Lo min hayom, v'lo min halayla, v'lo mod ba chachmas yivanes. So go find a time of the day that's not day, and that's not night, and you're great. Go learn all the chachmas yivanes you want to learn. It says v'gisa v'yom and v'layla. Find a day that's not day and not night. You're good to go. You can learn anything you want. So that's the second opinion. So now some people have a smart aleck response. They're like, oh, every day has a time of day that's not day and not night, right? Because in the halachic day, we know that we have this period called Bein Hashmashos, right? This, I think in Chicago, it's about a 20-minute period between the time that the sun starts to set and then it sets. It's this the twilight. So good. So that's not day and not night. So the only problem with that response is that if you look through halachic literature, it's actually the opposite. That we assume Bein Hashmashos is both day and night. We don't know which one is, so we assume it's both. Not that we assume it's neither. So then you're stuck. But anyway, that's opinion number two. You find a time that's not day and that's not night, and that's a good time to learn other materials. And then the Gemara says, "Upligid Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, Damar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani." Says, "No, no, no. That's not what this pasuk means at all." Says Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, "Amar Rabbi Yonasan, pasuk ze eino lo chova v'lo mitzvah." This pasuk is not an obligation. It's not a mitzvah. Ela bracha. The pasuk's a blessing because you got to look at the context of where this pasuk was written. What did Hashem say? Raha Kadosh Baruch Hu es Yoshua. Rabbi Hashem saw that Yoshua, right, the leader of the Jewish people, Yoshua, Shedivrei Torah Chavivim Alav Biyoser. He said, you know, I can tell that Yoshua, he loves Torah. That's all he wants to do. He loves Torah so much. Shenemar Umesharso Yoshua Benun Naar Lo Yomush Mitocha O. Because the pasuk says Yoshua, he was constantly in the tent. What does the tent refer to? It refers to learning in the Beis Medrash. Yoshua never left the Beis Medrash. He loves Torah so much, says the Ribono Sholom. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so Hashem says to Yoshua, Kol kach aviven alecha divrei Torah, you love the Torah so much, lo yomosh sefer Torah zeri picha, I'm telling you, the Torah will never leave your lips. You love it so much, I'm giving you a bracha that you'll always be able to learn it. So this is not coming to tell me that I have to learn it all the time. It's not coming to tell you that I can't learn it all the time. It's not telling you to do it in the morning, do it at night. It's a bracha. Love the Torah, and I'm telling you, you'll have all the opportunity in the world, you'll understand all the Torah that you want to have. So that brings us, there's another source here that I'm not gonna mention it right now. There's an interesting story in the Gemara. The Gemara has in Bava Kamma, again, just in terms of this time period in Jewish history, so the Gemara has in Bava Kamma a story about after the times of the Chashmonaim. So after the Chashmonaim, there was a lot of havoc in the Jewish, in Israel, in the Jewish leadership. The Chashmonaim, they had all different, they had fighting for power, and it was very bad. So there was a time period when one family seized Jerusalem, and the Kohanim in Jerusalem were still operating the Beis HaMikdash, and it was a whole problem. They couldn't get karbanos, and they had the whole thing, so they every day they would send out a bucket with some money, and the other family put in a carbon so they could offer the carbon to the Beis HaMikdash. And then finally, Gemara has from some guy who says that this guy was well-versed in Chachmas Yevanos. He knew all about the wisdom everywhere, and he says to the people putting the siege on Yerushalayim, he says to them, listen, as long as the Kohanim in Yerushalayim are doing the Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, as long as the Beis HaMikdash is functioning, you've got no chance. How do you expect to take over Yerushalayim and grab hold of the leadership if they're the ones who are serving Ribono Shel Olam in the Beis HaMikdash? So they said, oh, you know what, you're right, you got a great idea. So the next day, they put out the money in the bucket to get the carbon, and the people sieging Yerushalayim, they put a pig in the bucket to bring the pig back up, and the pig was grabbing onto the walls of the old city, and there was an earthquake, it was a whole terrible matzav. So from that day on, Chazal said, it's forbidden to teach your kids anything about Chachmas Yevanos. This is what Chachmas Yevanos, this is the suggestion that someone who knows Chachmas Yevanos has, so then you can't teach your kids about it. Something where it says, well, wait a second, I can list you a whole slew of Rabbanim who know Chachmas Yevanos, so how are you going to tell me that they can't? So the Gemara has all these different explanations of who can and who can't. So again, you see, if you look in the Gemara, you've got lots of different opinions that, is it okay, is it not okay, is it a good thing, is it a bad thing? So you see that the evidence from Chazal in a word is mixed, right? It's a complicated issue, it's hard to know, and that leaves us with two things. So we'll take a second to ask if anyone has any questions, but that leaves us with two things. One is we want to discuss, so what happened? So now that we've discussed the primary sources in Chazal, so we want to see, so how does that play out throughout Jewish history? And we're going to look at the next level, we're going to look at the Rishonim, right? The first commentaries on the Gemara, and in theory we could go on and on and on tracing it through each generation till today, but we're not going to have time to do all of that, but we'll just do the building blocks, we'll get to the Rishonim today. And that's number one. And number two is, where does that leave us as people here who are sitting in 2014? Where does that leave us? So we'll end with a few thoughts on that. So if anyone has any questions, now would be a great time, and then we can continue. Yes?
There's one thing to talk about, this Jewish world and the other worlds and other cultures. But what about studying something which is more or less common to all cultures, say engineering or computers or something that's not philosophical of ours?
Okay, so that's a great question. Now, that I think we will address that in part. It is definitely the case, just to make sure that it's clear, it's definitely the case that if you would look, as you look through literature, and it'll become more clear as you get to the later commentaries and halachic decisors, because some of these things became more relevant later on in history. In the earlier times, it was really a question of philosophy, mathematics, and things like that. But there are people who distinguish between things which are sort of scientific truths, so to speak, or professions, ways of learning. Well, I'm going to make my living as an engineer, so I have to learn the necessary facts, the necessary skills to be an engineer. So that's one area of outside culture. And then there's the more philosophical area, as you're pointing out, which that contains some of the more esoteric concepts, things that won't necessarily jive with the philosophies of the Torah. So that becomes more of the touchy area. So we'll see that there are people that distinguish between those aspects, but for the purposes of what we're discussing now, we're talking about everything, even issues of philosophy, questions of things that might not necessarily jive with the philosophy that we believe the Torah presents. The question is, what about learning things that don't necessarily jive with the Torah? Does that have any benefit or not? But it's definitely, you're pointing out a very valid point, which is that it is a broad discussion. Any other questions before we move on? Excellent. Okay, so now what I want to do is I want to start with, let's see what happened. So we've got the Mishnah, we've got the Gemara. So now we want to go to the time period of the Rishonim, the commentators who are grappling with understanding the Torah Shebaal Peh, the Torah that's written, that's recorded in the Gemara, trying to understand how to take the Gemara and bring that into the everyday life. So when you talk about the Rishonim, what we're going to do is we're going to note that there were really two schools of thought in this area, and these two schools of thought have to do with geographic location. So we'll see that when it comes to the time period of the Rishonim, which is basically the medieval ages, right? So we're talking about approximately the 10th to the 15th century or so. That's the time period that we're dealing with. So in that era of Jewish history, so we're really talking about two major geographic locations, one which is referred to as Ashkenaz, and the other, which is referred to as Sfarad. So, right, these are the originations of the Ashkenazi traditions and the Sephardi traditions, and we'll see that we know that Ashkenazi and Sephardi traditions are very different from one another. So we'll see that one area that they're differing from one another is actually with regards to this question, in terms of how did the Ashkenazic tradition view the engagement with modern culture, the engagement with secular knowledge and wisdom, versus how did the Sephardi culture deal with that? And that's how we're going to kind of break it up in this stage in the game. So we're going to start with Ashkenaz. And Ashkenaz, as some may be familiar, is basically a reference to northern Europe in the medieval ages. And Ashkenaz, just we'll talk about it a little bit as we go, but Ashkenaz was basically Christian ruled. So when we talk about Ashkenaz, probably the most famous Ashkenazic authority was, of course, Rashi. Rashi was one of the earlier Rishonim living in France in the 11th century. And a professor by the name of Avraham Grossman has written extensively on Rashi, trying to prove that Rashi was very much against the study of secular wisdom, of secular knowledge. And we are running short, so I'm not going to be able to read everything inside. But in source number 7 and source number 8, these are just two examples that he brings, that if you look in some sources in Tanakh, so the Tanakh refers to Chachma in various contexts. Shlomo HaMelech talks about how Hashem created the world with Chachma. Shlomo HaMelech talks about how he engaged in all the Chachma that there was, etc., etc., that he was a man of wisdom. We know that Shlomo HaMelech is known to be the wisest man of all, so in his writings in Koheles and in Mishlei, so he refers to some of his experiences dealing with Chachma and studying Chachma. So what Avram Grossman points out is that if you look at the times when the word Chachma is used in Tanakh, so Rashi always defines Chachma as Torah. When the Tanakh says Chachma, it means Torah. And what I put here are two examples where if you just read the Pasuk, the simple interpretation does not seem to be Torah. It seems to be more generic or broader in scope. And that's why Shlomo HaMelech is dealing with. And nonetheless, Rashi goes out of his way to talk about Chachma really only means Torah. So what Avram Grossman tries to prove based on this notion is that Rashi was trying to push a certain philosophy that don't think that Chachma is something that the Torah is condoning. Don't think the Torah is talking about Chachma as something that's part of what our Jewish lives should entail. Whenever the Torah is talking about Chachma, realize that that means the Torah. That's what Chachma is. It's not outside the Torah. It's inside the Torah. So that's one sort of Ashkenazi approach. If you look at source number 9, I have from the Or Zarua, who was Rav Yitzchak ben Moshe, who lived in the 13th century in Vienna. So he is very explicit. He talks about, well, can someone learn Aristotle? And know what he says? He says Aristotle was a heretic. He had all of his ideas, they have nothing to do with the Torah. They're against what the Torah says. So anyone who learns Aristotle, he is a heretic. He's a kofer. One cannot learn any of the works of Aristotle. That's what he says here at the beginning in source number 9. So again, you see from the Ashkenazi perspective that learning outside wisdom, not necessarily exactly what the Torah is looking for, not exactly what the Torah is condoning. An interesting figure, and this is kind of a good segue into the next piece. Actually, before we get to this, we'll just point out that it's many modern scholars like to show how when you look at Ashkenaz, so it was, we mentioned that it was a Christian society at the time in the medieval ages, and as we know, in medieval Christian regions, the Middle Ages were really referred to as the Dark Ages, that this was a time where there was not a lot of cultural productivity, there was a lot of stagnation, there was a lot of the culture was very primitive in many senses. So what scholars point out is that if you're an Ashkenazic scholar learning Torah during that time period, so you are developing your learning without exposure in many times, and even if you have exposure, very minimal exposure, to other philosophies and other thoughts, so you're developing a worldview which never really had to figure out how to incorporate these alien influences. So when you do come across something like this, what's the natural response? The natural response is basically to reject, because your whole upbringing is such that you don't have the familiarity and the sophistication that had to kind of figure out how to incorporate all of these factors and facets into the worldview of Judaism. So therefore, it's kind of natural that when things come up, it's not something that really is going to make its way in. And that's a function of the fact that they were studying in a period where there wasn't a lot of development in society and philosophy and things like that. So it's pretty reasonable and understandable that that was kind of, there was a defensive posture that the Ashkenazic poskim took. Now, if you look at the next figure, it's a good segue into the Sephardi regions. And this is the figure of Rav Asher ben Yechiel, known as the Rush. The Rush lived in around 1300, and he was born in Germany and trained and learned in Germany. So we're talking about born in Ashkenaz, but as a result of persecutions, he ended up having to migrate to Spain, which was Muslim-controlled. So he moved to Spain, and I think it was about 1304. And when he was in Spain, he was of course a big Talmud Chacham, and he became a posek. He became a scholar who was sought after for his halachic advice in Spain as well. So in a tshuva here, we'll see that this sort of attention that existed was something that he felt as someone who kind of was living on both sides of the fence. Because on the one hand, his training was such that he had nothing to do with outside wisdom or secular knowledge, but he found himself in a region, in a world, which very much embraced the philosophy of the Greeks, etc. And we'll see that he was responding to other rabbanim of the time, that the other rabbanim of the time were actually kind of insulting him or questioning his authority because of his background and because he was not as sophisticated culturally as they were. So here in source number 10, you find a great example of this, where he says, he's responding to other rabbanim of his time, and he says, Hatsa rishona shekasavta, she'en roi sheyifso dinze elo mi sheyesh bo shnei dvarim halalu. So you told me that there are two criteria which are necessary in order to rule on a halachic case. Sheyeh bal svar nechona, that number one, you have to obviously have a logical mind that you can understand and analyze the halachic sources. That's, of course, a prerequisite to being able to judge on any halachic question. V'hashniya sheyeh bagi b'loshon arav amisis. And the second qualification is that you have to know Arabic. So he says to him, let me tell you something, on the fact that you need to be someone who has a logical mind and understand how the Torah works and that you should be able to analyze the halachic sources properly. So thank God, Hashem blessed me. I got the Mesorah, I have the capacity to be able to understand the inner workings of the Torah, how the Torah works, and that I can apply the logic of the Torah to modern day halachic shailas. So thank God that I have. And by the way, I have that just as much as any of you Spanish Sephardi poskim and scholars that are found in these days. And even though I don't know all your fancy secular wisdom and all your philosophy, I don't know any of that stuff. Baruch Rachmana de Shizvin Minei. Thank God he never exposed me to that stuff. Because we know that anybody who encounters this, the only thing they have to worry about is that these things are going to come and make him stray from God. He's not going to study the Torah properly. He's not going to follow in the path of Hashem. So thank God I never had to deal with any of that stuff. So you see this sort of tension where you have from Ashkenaz, where he's growing up in a world that says this stuff is not part of the Torah. This is not what we are about. This is not what we have to offer. And the kind of pressure that he felt when he moved into the Sephardi communities, where that was obviously something that was embraced and extolled. So that kind of brings us to the quintessential, the classic Sephardi posek. Of course, the Rambam Maimonides, who, as we know, was a champion of secular wisdom, of philosophy, and its all of its intricacies. And again, we're only a few minutes left, so we're not going to be able to read everything inside. But just as a point of background, so we know that the Muslim Spain, so obviously we've already alluded to the fact that that was really the golden era of culture. This was the peak of the Islamic culture during the 11th to 13th centuries or so in Spain and in northern Africa. And so this was an environment where you had Greek philosophy available in the vernacular in Arabic. So you had the Jewish scholars who spoke the regular language, so they were able to access and understand and read all the classic works of Aristotle, all the classic works in Greek philosophy, and they lived in a society which was sophisticated, a society where in order to succeed, you almost had to be sophisticated. So this was a society where the Rambam, when he grew up as a young boy already, he was already exposed to and studying all levels of philosophy and different areas of mathematics, etc., etc. So this is obviously a very different upbringing, which again gave the Jewish scholars in that time the ability to really grapple with. So how does that, how do we incorporate that, or how does that fit with the Mesorah that we have from the Torah of the Ribono Shel Olam? How is it that we incorporate these other aspects, which of course, as we know, everything on some level is God-given, even the philosophy from the Greeks, so that came, it's not the Torah, but Hashem created the Greeks and created the mind, and there are ideas that people have, right? The Rambam says, wherever you find truth, you should seek truth, wherever you're going to find it. That's what we are all about. That was the sort of mentality that the Rambam has, and in many places in the Rambam's works, in his philosophical works, and in his halachic works, you see that this was his posture, this was his mentality. We saw in source number 11 here, from the Mar Nevuchim. So the Rambam has that the goal in life is to achieve this sort of mental and intellectual perfection, to understand God, to know God as best as we can. And he says, so towards the end, four lines up, all these points are ultimate ends, which can be made clear in detail and through definitions only after one knows many opinions. The best way to know God in the fullest, God is infinite, God is all-encompassing, so the best way to have a picture of God, to try and know God as best we can, is of course to have as much information, as much knowledge as we possibly can take in order to apply that and try to understand God and our relationship with Him in the best way possible. And so we see that here in the Mar Nevuchim. We see that in his halachic work in source number 13 in the Mishnah Torah, which is his magnum opus in terms of halacha, where he says at the middle of line number 2 in source number 13, Eino ohev HaKadosh Baruch Hu ela bedas shia de'ehu. The way to love God, we all have to love God, the only way to love God is to know Him as best we can. V'alpi hadeya tiyeh ha'ava. In accordance with how well we know God, that will determine how much, how deep our connection, how deep our love can go for the Ribono Shel Olam. In ma'at ma'at, if you know God a little bit about God, so you'll be able to appreciate and love Him a little bit. Vim harbe harbe, if you know a lot, so then of course you can love Him a lot. Lefikach, therefore, tzarech ha'adam liyachid atzmo lahav and lahaskil bechachmos utzvunos hamodiim lo es kono kfi koach sheyesh ba'adam lahav and lahasig kemosh b'yarn behilchos yodiyat Torah. Therefore, what do you have to do? You have to prepare yourself, make yourself to the best of one's ability. Each person is going to have different abilities, different interests in terms of how to cultivate this. But in the end of the day, one has to search and cultivate their knowledge and their understanding of God as best as they can by trying to find God in all avenues, through all avenues in all aspects of life, through philosophy, through math, through science, through literature, through history, whatever it is that's going to bring a greater appreciation of God. So that's what we have to do in order to know God as best as we can. So that's what you have in the Rambam. Since we only have 2 minutes left, let's just see. I'll just tell you, source number 16, this is kind of like an extreme example of a Sephardi sort of mentality. Rav Yosef ibn Kaspi was a 14th century Provencenik, and he was a great philosopher, grammarian, mathematician, etc., and he wrote an ethical will. And in his ethical will, he described to his son, he said, listen, you know, when I was a kid, I learned a lot of Gemara, I learned a lot about the halacha, and I'll tell you, I'm a little bit upset about it, but not so upset. I don't really know so much about how to paskin a halachic shayla. I don't really know so much Gemara. But I'll tell you, one can't be a master of all trades. You can be good at one thing, you can be good at another thing, but it's very difficult to be a master of all trades. So what is he a master of? I'm not so good at Gemara, I'm not so good at halacha, but I'll tell you, I know a lot of philosophy, and that's great. So he tells his son the story. You know, one time I had this party at my house, and I had all these people over, and I'll tell you, I had a help in the kitchen, and help in the kitchen through the meat spoon and the dairy pot, or vice versa. And he's like, you know what? I didn't know what to do. I had no idea. What do? I have a meat spoon and a dairy pot. I didn't know what to do, so I had to go to the rabbi's house, and the rabbi was busy all day. I was standing outside. All my guests were eating and drinking, and all the food's not kosher. I have no idea what's going on. I didn't know how to paskin the shayla. I get to the rabbi's house. He tells me what to do, and I go back, and then I'm finally able to work it all out. And he's like, you know what? That's pretty embarrassing. You know, I'm a scholar here, and I don't know what to do when a meat spoon falls into a dairy pot. But listen, in the end of the day, I know philosophy, so it's okay. So that's what he tells his son. So you see that those are kind of the two trajectories that have kind of developed, at least in the medieval period, in terms of the building blocks of our Masorah with the Rishonim and how they interpret the different sources that we saw were mixed in the Gemara and the Mishnah. Just to kind of leave off with, we're going to skip many, many years, but just to leave off at the end, I have two excerpts from Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who is probably familiar to everybody who, as a modern-day posek, a modern-day leader of our community. And this is, you know, in many senses, our community has kind of, regardless of whether or not we're Ashkenazi or Sephardi, at least in our circles, it's the Sephardi sort of mentality has kind of been the one that's been adopted that we've taken on in regards to this issue. And there are different ways to kind of incorporate and think about the value. Once you're talking about that we do incorporate that which is the world has to offer. So there are different reasons and different values that you can think about as to why that value is so important. So Rav Aaron Lichtenstein here in an essay, in two different essays that he deals with this, so he presents two different options. I'll just share them outside with you briefly because we really have to finish. So the first is in source number 17, where he talks about, you know, one value that you have in terms of incorporating secular knowledge is very practical. On the one, you know, when we talk about Torah, so Torah is very complex, and Torah deals with all aspects of life. So if in many ways, when you're learning Torah, it's very difficult to understand the piece of Torah, the text, properly, if you don't have some basic information about the way the world around it is working. So for example, he says, there are halachos that have to deal with, there's a whole Seder of Shas called Zroim, which deals with all the halachos that have to do with planting in Eretz Yisrael. So he said, if you don't know anything about farming, you don't know anything about planting, so how can you understand Zroim? You read all these words, you have no idea what you're talking about, so how can you understand what the Torah is telling you? You have to obviously immerse yourself and educate yourself in order to understand the Torah. That's, you know, one example. He says, if you don't understand anything about biology or physiology, so all the rules of Taharas HaMishpacha and family purity, so you're going to be reading through these Gemaras about giving birth and about menstruation and things like that, and you have no idea what it's talking about. How can you apply these halachos if you have no idea what in the world is going on biologically in the human body? And he gives tons of examples. So on one level, the idea of incorporating and studying other things is something that has a practical benefit. But he says it goes beyond that. He says in source number 18, he says that in general, and you can read this, it's in English here, so you read it on your own when we're done, he says that there's another aspect which is really the more of a complementary, supplementary aspect, that in general, when we talk about someone who is a Torah scholar, someone who has immersed themselves and studies the Torah and really wants to live a life in the best way, in the fullest way possible, so what's obviously necessary is to be someone who's a sophisticated thinker, somebody who has a very wide perspective and a wide worldview, so that they're able to really incorporate and appreciate everything that the Torah has to offer in the broader context. And in many ways, by involving ourselves in the what the world has to offer into the modern culture, etc. So everything that we do is a way of really making ourselves more sophisticated thinkers and expanding our spiritual and intellectual horizons in ways that will hopefully bring us to become better Ovdei Hashem in all avenues of life. So if anyone has any questions, I'm around. There's a few minutes till the next class. Thank you for coming, and have a good rest of the day.